Picture this. You're halfway through a DIY car fix, tools scattered everywhere, and boom, you realize you're missing a part. It's okay, because you know whatever it is, it's on eBay. They've got everything. Brakes, headlights, cold air intakes, whatever you need. And it's guaranteed to fit, which means no more crossing your fingers and hoping you ordered the right thing. All the parts you need, at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit, every time. eBay. Things. People. Love.
Not a lot gets us F1 fans quite so excited as an F1 driver moving teams. The breaking news graphic goes on social media. People start photoshopping the driver's head onto their new team's race suit. Last year, people actually lost their minds at the sight of Lewis Hamilton wearing a red outfit before he'd even joined Ferrari.
Welcome, everybody, to the first F1 Nation podcast of 2024. It's earlier than we'd planned because of the huge, huge news that Lewis Hamilton will be joining Ferrari in 2025.
But come on, it is exciting. In other sports, there are hundreds, thousands of players, and they move around all the time. In F1, there are only 20 seats. So when a driver moves, it's a big deal. And every move is big. It means a new car, a new boss, sometimes a new engineer, new ways of working to adjust to. Is it that hard? Does it slow them down? We're going to answer all of those questions and more about drivers moving teams. Welcome to F1 Explains. Well, hello there. Welcome to F1 Explains. This is the official Formula One podcast that exists to answer your questions about this wonderful, brilliant, fascinating, exciting sport. My name is Christian Hugill, and if you've got a question that you would like us to put to an expert in the paddock, you can, of course, email us. Our address is f1explains@f1.com. You can send your email in the form of words or a voice message. We always love a voice message, particularly my absent friend Katie Osborne, who's usually alongside me. Now, the reason we're talking this week about drivers moving about is because this season we've had loads of moves. It's round two of the championship this weekend. So just a second race weekend in new overalls for a lot of our drivers. Now, a bit of context as a plane flies over me here in the F1 paddock. Some F1 drivers stay with the same teams for a long old time. Now, others move around a lot. So, for example, Lewis Hamilton spent 12 seasons with Mercedes. That's a record, by the way. Yet another record Lewis has. In that same time period, Carlos Sainz moved four times from Toro Rosso to Renault to McLaren and then to Ferrari. Lewis and Carlos have, of course, made big moves for the 2025 season. Every F1 driver's experience is different. So we asked two of them to answer your questions. We're very good like that. We're a generous people at F1 Explains. We've got Valtteri Bottas, who went from Williams to Mercedes to Sauber and back to Mercedes again.
All teams, they're definitely different. Every team has different kind of way they work.
When I play the F1 game, when I change engines, they all sound a little bit different. Is that just the game? Or do they? Or
they
when
do,
you're
they
sat
do.
There?
No, they do sound different completely. Yeah. And even the smell is different.
Really? Yeah. The smell of an engine
is
different?
Yeah, I think they use different kind of oils in different engines. And yeah, I've noticed that as well, which is pretty cool.
Valtteri's coming up, and on predictably entertaining Valtteri Bottas form. Really looking forward to that. But first, a second F1 Explains appearance for 2009 world champion Jenson Button, who also knows all about the challenges of moving teams. Jenson Button for appearance two. Welcome back to F1 Explains.
Great to be back.
So soon.
Yes, I know, but I was so excited by the first episode that I thought, you know what? Let's do it.
Oh, and we appreciate that, Jenson. We appreciate that. As we've already said, we're talking all about moving teams. You moved teams three times during your Formula One career. Williams to Benetton, Alpine nowadays in new money. You moved to Honda, BAR, as they were called when you were there as well for a time. You moved to McLaren. You had a great experience with moving from team to team to team to team to team. How difficult is that to do?
Well, first of all, when you said I moved three teams, I was like, I moved way more teams than that. But you're right. They just kept changing names.
They changed names a lot, yeah.
Yeah, so I went from Williams to Benetton, which turned into Renault.
Yes.
And then I left. and went to BAR, which turned into Honda, which turned into Braun.
Yes.
And then I went to McLaren, which just was
which stayed as McLaren, helpfully, because at that point you had had enough confusion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then they went and put a Honda engine in the back for the last couple of years, which is like, you know what?
Which didn't go so well, actually, did it at the time? No.
I was like, you know what? I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm done.
That's
I can't
me.
Wait for this to turn around.
That's
but
me.
But no, fair play. They turned it around, all right? But no, it's a weird one, changing teams. And I remember, first of all, going into Williams, and it was such a nice atmosphere. And nothing was really expected of me as a young kid. And then I went to Benetton. Very different atmosphere.
Really?
Didn't like it at all. You know, they were still the team that... They're flying high still from their world championship wins back in the early 90s, and it was almost 10 years after. And it just seemed that the atmosphere was, they weren't very welcoming at all. So I struggled to get to grips with working with the team. And you can see it in my results. It took me a long time to find engineers that I like working with, and the atmosphere became good, like in year two when the team went to Renault. When I went to BAR, absolutely loved it. It was like walking into Williams again, you know, welcomed into the team, was downloaded of information, and we went to work, and immediately it felt like a family. And you see it in the performance. So, you know, as racing drivers, we know what we can do as in a car, but still there's insecurities there. And if you don't feel that people believe in you, you don't perform as well. Also on the engineering side, if people aren't listening to you, you can't move that team in the direction you'd like it to. So it all depends on which team you're going to. And then when I went from winning the world championship with Braun to McLaren, a move that everyone was shocked that I was doing, even McLaren were, it was lovely because I was going kind of into the lion's den. You know, I was going into Lewis Hamilton's team. Even Ross Brawn told me it was a mistake leaving Brawn and going into McLaren. But that move for me was one of those moves. It was like, you know what? Let's see what I can really do. I'm going to go up against who everyone thinks is the best. And I loved that challenge. And a team that was like, wow, you know, McLaren.
And
this is exciting. This is what I was looking forward to. You know, this team that has everything. You know, there's no excuses. So that relationship was really fun. And that was a 7-year relationship with McLaren.
And if I'm not mistaken, you outscored Lewis Hamilton while you were teammates at McLaren, right?
I will take that. Yes, that is correct. You know, I'm very realistic. He had more failures than I had. So who knows how the points would have worked out. Take it.
Take it.
But for me, you know, I won 6 races over those 3 years. He won 8 races. And I just loved that fight, you know, with Lewis. Getting one over on Lewis Hamilton, you know, you've done a really good job. So I enjoyed those 3 years. And we had an interesting relationship. I mean, good most of the time. Sometimes not, but that's always the way when you're both competitive. You find each other on track, you know, many occasions. So it was a really important part of my year and the years where I think I was driving at my best.
It's interesting as well, because you described those moves from team to team. And when you said you had negative experiences off track, that seemed to reflect in results. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, how different do Formula One teams feel? So I'm guessing they feel quite different, and I'm guessing that has an impact on track when you're struggling a bit off it?
It does. It hurts you off track and on track in terms of engineering and on-track driving. It's amazing how much the team atmosphere changes your feelings and how you're able to put a weekend together. So yes, it's important. I mean, most teams you walk in and they're just positive, you know, a new guy coming in because you're excited about being there. They're excited about a change, a new challenge, but some of them not so much.
What's harder to learn, a new car or a new team environment and how a team works?
It depends. I mean, some cars are very different than others. And it sounds silly because they all look the same. But like Danny Ric going to McLaren, for example, he really struggled with the way that it worked. When you hit the brake pedal, you couldn't turn it at the same time because it locked the inside tire. And that was the way he drove. So he struggled with that transition. Other Formula One cars, you know, you can go from team to team and it isn't really that different. But then there's a very different way of working. The engineering team's different. You know, the language that's spoken between engineer and driver is very important that you're on the same page. And I don't actually mean languages. It's the engineering language, if you like, that rapport that you need, understanding of feedback. So there's a bit of learning there. You know, Carlos, for example, Carlos Sainz going to Williams, working with a new engineer, Gaetan, who is awesome. I worked with him when I raced at Le Mans back in 2018. It's important that they are ready at the first race and have a good understanding of each other.
Speaking of driving Formula One cars, we've had performance engineers on this podcast, sort of like driver coaches for those newer to Formula One. And they say that drivers have to be able to sort of brake and accelerate and steer very instinctively, sort of on muscle memory. If you're having to think about it too much, it can veer into what you'll hear commentators say, overthinking. How much does that take to get to that point with a new car when it is actually you are really operating as one with the car?
It's pretty easy with most F1 drivers. You know, these are the best guys in the world. I think that the best drivers, yeah, they don't think about driving. They're thinking about what the car is doing. They're thinking about what feedback do I give to the team to move this car forward. That's a massive part of racing, not just in Formula One, it's in other categories as well. You know, I race in World Endurance Championship and we're doing exactly the same. There's so much information that you're feeding back to the team. You know, you're already talking about, while you're driving, you're already talking about the changes that you should make for the next time you get in the car so you can get them ready for making that change so you can get back out on track. So yes, you need to be doing many different things at once. Driving should be second nature so that you can really work on what the car is doing and develop the car.
Ever been to Ottawa in Canada?
Never been there.
That's where Bex lives. She's emailed f1explains@f1.com. I'd like to go. Apparently it's lovely. She says, when drivers change teams, do they spill the beans about their previous team? Are they allowed to share what they know?
Yes, they are allowed to share what they know. Obviously, they don't have a computer full of all the important secrets. But, you know, for Carlos, he would have been downloaded from the team. But you got to remember, he's a driver. You know, he understands some engineering, but he's not an engineer. So he's not going to know exactly what Ferrari are doing with their car. And it's obviously a very different car. But the way of working, and, you know, Ferrari are very strong. They're at the front of the field. You know, they've been there for decades. And the way that they work together as a team, he can definitely share that information. He's bringing that information to Williams. And that's why he's a really important part of this team. Bringing that information, the experience of working with Ferrari, but also working with McLaren, who he was with previously. So they've got two drivers that have been in the best teams in the business. They've got a team principal who's been with the best team for the last decade, Mercedes. So they have everything.
Just finally, Jensen, you've mentioned a couple of them there, but the vast majority of the teams on the grid this year have had drivers who are changing teams. Which one of those excites you most for the 2025 season?
I mean, being British, you're going to say, you know, Lewis going to Ferrari. And, you know, as a racing driver and a massive fan of this sport, that's the one team that I didn't get to drive for and had an opportunity to about 10 years ago, but it never actually happened. So, you know, I think seeing him in a Ferrari, seeing him go up against Charles Leclerc, that's a tall order. You know, it's Charles' team. The last time Lewis moved team was 13 years ago, and he's obviously 40 years old now, so it's a little different, but it will be interesting to see that dynamic. He's obviously an exceptional driver, individual, and we will see him at his best, I think, with this new challenge. But that's an exciting one to see those two go up against each other. Others, I mean, you know, seeing Liam Lawson alongside Max, we know it can be a career destroyer going up alongside Max, but you got to be willing to take the risk. Otherwise, what's the point? If you can't go up against the best, why are we here? So that's an exciting one as well. I really do look forward to seeing Carlos and Alex work together at Williams, because they're at a point where they have to work together. You know, they want to beat each other, obviously, but it doesn't really make much difference if they're finishing, you know, 8th and 9th. You know, they've got to work together to push this team forward, to help the team get back to the front over the next few years. So I look forward to seeing that fight, but also just how that dynamic works within Williams.
You mentioned that Liam's opted to go in next to Max. I spoke to a guy once who opted to be Lewis Hamilton's teammate. People said that was mad. Worked out all right.
Yeah, I went there with a bit more experience, though. I just won the World Championship.
Yeah.
You know, he's not even done a full season yet. So it's a little different. You know, I had nothing. Well, I did have something to prove to myself. But yeah, it's a very different scenario for... He's basically a rookie. He's not done a full season of F1.
He's but a child. Jensen, such a pleasure having you on F1 Explains. Thank you so much for being on here at Williams today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed chatting to Jensen. Thank you very much to him for being on F1 Explains this week and last. A double Jensen Button appearance on F1 Explains to start the season. What a treat. I found that particularly interesting, especially where Jensen was talking about how his enjoyment of being at a team sort of directly correlated with his on-track results. Like, you could see he wasn't enjoying it at Benetton by the fact that he wasn't as fast at Benetton. Then when he went to BAR much later and his form massively increased, you could see he was enjoying it there. I just found that really, really interesting. Right, you're listening to F1 Explains, the official F1 podcast that answers your questions about Formula One. And we'll be back in the F1 paddock with more in just a couple of minutes.
Strap in. You're in the race with F1 TV Premium. See what the race director sees with custom multi-view. Watch every jaw-dropping moment in live 4K UHD. Across up to six screens, uninterrupted. Experience ultimate live immersion with F1 TV Premium. Available on selected devices.
Picture this. You're halfway through a DIY Carfix, tools scattered everywhere, and boom, you realize you're missing a part. It's okay, because you know whatever it is, it's on eBay. They've got everything. Brakes, headlights, cold air intakes, whatever you need. And it's guaranteed to fit, which means no more crossing your fingers and hoping you ordered the right thing. All the parts you need, at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit, every time. eBay. Things. People. Love.
This is F1 Explains, an official Formula One podcast, together with F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Nation, our other official pods. We are here answering your questions about drivers moving teams. We've heard what Jenson Button has to say. Now let's talk to someone who swapped teams very recently, Valtteri Bottas. Sat next to me now. Welcome back to F1 Explains, Valtteri.
Thank you, mate. Thanks for having me.
It is lovely to have you. Valtteri, it sounds like you, from our pre-recording tests that we've just been doing, Valtteri, fresh from a fantastic breakfast by the sounds of it.
That is right. I went to a place close to the beach. It's on the menu. It was called The Breakfast.
Big breakfast.
Yeah, you know, it had scrambled eggs, had some gluten-free bread, some halloumi, sausage, beans, you name it. Full
you
on
are
thing.
Powered up.
And
for
I still
this
didn't have a heart attack. So we're good.
And yet you look in fine physical
yeah,
form.
Thank you.
Excellent. Valtteri, your Formula One career, you moved teams in 2017. You went Williams to Mercedes, 2022 Mercedes to Alfa Romeo, which then became Sauber. That team sort of moved while you were there.
Yep.
And then 2024 Sauber to Mercedes as a reserve driver, ready for the 2025 season. What was it like for you to move teams? For example, how different was Sauber from Mercedes, from Williams back in the day as well? How different are they all?
All teams, they're definitely different. You know, you've got different, can be even different nationalities. Like, example, when I was at Sauber, they're based in Switzerland. The rest has been in the UK, but every team has different kind of way they work. You know, different type of factories, different simulators, obviously different engineering teams, and even the teams can be structured quite differently internally, which is quite interesting. In the end, yeah, everyone works to be as quick as you can on the racetrack, but in a different way.
You mentioned wanting to be as quick as you can. Does moving teams affect your performance as a driver? So, for example, we all as fans look at on track. Does getting used to all the new stuff slow you down? Can it have a motivational effect and speed you up as you want to sort of impress your new team? How can moving team change your sheer speed?
My feeling is normally it has quite a positive effect. Like, of course, yes, there is lots to get used to, new people to work with and figure out how they work, how you can make most out of the people around you. But as a driver, it's kind of motivating to have something fresh and new. And yeah, you're just really keen to do well. Only downside is, yes, you're going to have completely a different racing car, which you will have to adapt to, which can take, you know, sometimes a few races to figure out what's the best driving style, etc.
I remember going back to your first big move of your career, where you'd been at Williams. And you and Felipe Massa had sort of been surprise packages at that time because the Williams team had a great car pushing for podiums. And it sort of felt at the time that Williams were sort of plucky underdogs, if you like, really pushing up there. And then all of a sudden, when Nico retired, you got the call up to go to Mercedes. Were there any sheer nerves there when you go from being almost, I guess, a big fish in a small pond to being all of a sudden in this championship winning machine like Mercedes?
Of course there is. You know, when you're jumping from a team like Williams, which, like you mentioned, we actually had some great years and results. But when you're jumping into a team that has won the last few championships in drivers and constructors, there is pressure. A lot of it comes from you, you know, because you want to do well. You know, it's your chance to fight for the title. But it definitely makes a difference when you are, you know, jumping into the best car on the grid.
You've been an F1 driver many years, and I know you're on this podcast to talk about changing teams. Can you explain to us what on earth that noise was in the background? What's that? I don't know if this is being picked up on the mic. Producer Jamie says it is.
I think it's like the paddock dentist. You know, they have this service that you can just walk in and get drilled.
If it's that loud, I really feel sorry for whoever is the subject of the paddock dentist.
Yeah.
We're doing this interview at the back of the garages and something is happening. And I think the Red Bull garage, I don't even want to know what it is, but apologies if there's a slightly annoying noise in the background.
I think they're stopped now, so we're good.
It's good. Yeah. We're good. Let's move on and talk engines. F1 Explains at F1.com is the place where you can send your questions. We will put them to people in the paddock like Valtteri here. F1 Explains listeners, Dylan in New York, Chloe in Toronto, Manuela in Brazil, they all want to know about changing engine suppliers. Valtteri, you obviously spent 8 years driving a Mercedes power unit. Again, we talk about that time at Williams. Then you moved to Mercedes, where Mercedes had Mercedes engines, Williams had Mercedes engines. But then you switched to a Ferrari engine when you moved to Alfa Romeo, what we now know as Sauber. Help us non-racing drivers understand why changing engine is a big deal.
So engine, it obviously makes a difference, you know. In a Formula One car, you know, you've got the chassis, you know, the mechanical grip and the aerodynamic grip. And then you've got the engine, which you need that power on the straights. So it really is a big part of the performance. And the way different engines behave, you as a driver definitely feel it, you know. Some engines might be better with the drivability. Some engines might be better with the top-end power or less torque, you know, this kind of thing. So you kind of need to adapt to that as well. And every engine, you've got different settings, you know, different mappings for the throttle map, for the engine braking, all these kind of things. And especially now with the hybrid power units, the battery management is also done a bit differently between each engine. So again, something that you really need to get used to quickly before you start racing with a new engine.
Are you a gamer at all?
I used to be when I was young.
Still young, of course. Yeah. When I play the F1 game, when I change engines, they all sound a little bit different. Is that just the game, or do they?
They do sound different completely. Yeah. And the idle is different. All these things, the sounds are different as well, and even the smell is different.
Really, yeah. The smell of an engine's
different. Yeah, I think they use different kind of oils in different engines, and yeah, I've noticed that as well, which is pretty cool.
Another listener question for you, Valtteri. Nick is in Illinois and wants to know about getting used to a new steering wheel. We know F1 steering wheels have so many buttons and you drivers can choose how they're laid out. When you swap teams, Valtteri, do you ask your new team to set up your steering wheel in the same way as you had it before, or is it an opportunity to change with different systems and settings?
It depends on the team, but the teams I've been with, normally they've been quite flexible on changing the layout as you want, basically. But yeah, some teams I've heard that they don't want to change it too much between the two drivers. But for me, you can customize it. But again, it still takes time. But a good thing with the simulators nowadays, you know, you can have all the functions as you have on track in the wheel. So if you do, you know, I don't know, 5 or 6 sim days before the pre-season testing or the first race already, you are very comfortable with the wheel.
Sure. Obviously, another thing about changing teams is the mechanic, if you like, of changing the team itself. Now, of course, you guys as elite-level sports people will have agents, will have a team around you. I'm interested to know, Valtteri, as a driver, how much like control do you have over choosing a new team? Is it taken out of your hands? Is it in the hands of agents? How much control do you have?
Yeah, so I think it's different to other sports. That in Formula One, you don't normally get traded or anything like this. So it is normally the driver that chooses, like, yes or no. Obviously, then in case of if a team wants to get rid of a driver, they can, even though there are contracts. But you can kind of always pay somebody out if you want.
Of course.
But normally you don't trade. I think it's really rare that those kind of deals happen. So you definitely have a control of your future, and you don't have to go somewhere if you don't want to.
I am a famously indecisive person. I struggle with buying clothes. I don't know how I'd find it if I were to be making a decision over choosing a new team. It's such a big decision, isn't it? I mean, when you, I don't know, left Williams to go to Mercedes, when you left Mercedes to go to Sauber, how much did you sit and mull it over? Did you go with a gut instinct? What was that like, making that effectively life-changing decision?
Yeah, you know, it's a big decision, because it's also really hard to predict the future as well. Like, in X amount of years, who's going to be the most competitive? It's really hard to predict. You kind of try to, but you 100% can't. But for me, starting with Williams was a no-brainer. You know, they gave me the opportunity already to be the junior driver and test driver, and then I got the race seat, and that was like happy days. Same thing with Mercedes. You know, a winning team has an open spot and offers that to you. You go there. It's simple as that. So that was easy. Then after Mercedes, when they wanted to bring more young generation into the team, it was a bit more challenging. There was a couple of options. It was relatively late in the season, but there was a couple of options for my next contract, and it was kind of that time between Sauber and Williams. And I did go Sauber mainly because of Fred Vasseur, because I worked with him back in the day.
Of course.
But then Fred left after 1 year.
Which is really selfish of him, isn't it? I hope you told him off for that, Valtteri.
Yeah, you know, you can. But I don't blame him, because, again...
Because it's Ferrari, isn't it?
Again, you know, if a team like Ferrari offers you to be a team principal, you go there.
Of course.
So that's the name of the game.
I guess as well, you're thinking about the future. I remember seeing interview quotes with you at the time where you said Sauber had offered you like a multi-year deal, so you got that sort of stability. I guess as well, you're looking at not just the present season, but future seasons. I mean, we heard Carlos Sainz talking the new season of Drive to Survive so much about believing Williams has the potential to grow in future. I guess you're also balancing thinking about this season, but also next season, but also future seasons.
Of course, yeah. Like, sometimes you don't have the luxury to plan many seasons ahead, because it's quite a cutthroat sport. But if you have the chance, yeah, you definitely try to plan for the long-term future. And again, for me, now being back with Mercedes is because I think it's best for me for the future as well.
And even if you do plan too far in advance, you get blokes called Fred betraying you selfishly.
Yeah,
unbelievably.
Exactly. It is unbelievable sport.
And just finally, Valtteri, you have returned to Mercedes, as you've just said, after three seasons with Sauber. How much has the team changed while you've been away?
I would say, like I expected, so normal evolution. You know, it has, some people have changed, people have left, people have arrived, which is the normal thing to happen, but still in the key roles, you've got the similar familiar faces, you've got the same leadership pretty much as I left. Different drivers now, but, and yeah, the factory has been, like, improved, as all the teams do. You know, you always find new machinery, new equipment to try and make the cars better. So I would say normal evolution, and that winning mentality is still here, which is good to see.
And on last week's F1 Explains, we were talking about rookies and new people joining the sport. That's something Mercedes are having this year with Kimi Antonelli. How much, with your years of experience, so many pole positions and race wins, Valtteri, are you able to work with Kimi, who is not just moving to a new team, but moving to a new chapter in his career? You know, last time he raced was with a Formula 2 team. Now he's obviously always been part of Mercedes for quite a number of years, but he's finally stepped up. Are you able to be that sort of, not mentor figure as such, but are you able to offer guidance to newer drivers coming in when you're in a position like yourself, or does it not really work like that?
I believe I can. You know, I honestly, in the end, it's my job as well, is to be here for the benefit of the team and the performance of both drivers, and especially Kimi, because he has got lots to learn. He will have a steep learning curve, and he will have questions along the way, and that's why I'm here as well. So I'll be happy to help and support the best I can.
We have so many listeners get in touch with us, Valtteri, on this podcast from all over the world, and there is a common theme amongst them that F1 fans love having Valtteri Bottas in the sport. It is so lovely to see you back with Mercedes. And yeah, thanks for being so entertaining, because you feel like you're in your entertainment here at the moment, Valtteri. You are a lot of fun to have around this sport. And I think it's important to recognise that so many people appreciate it. So thank you for coming on F1 Explains, and thank you for being such a valued part of this sport. We really appreciate it.
I'll be around, so
see you around, mate. See you around.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you.
Valtteri Bottas there on F1 Explains. Huge thanks to Mercedes and to Valtteri for allowing us the time to chat to him. And I meant what I said there. I just love having Valtteri in the sport. He seems so comfortable in his own skin. It was really interesting to talk to him and get his perspective as well, because he's done some big moves in his career and he's now obviously back at Mercedes. And you never know. Valtteri is one of those drivers that just might well pop back up in a race seat in Formula 1 in the not too distant future. Now, F1 Explains has new episodes every single Friday. Make sure you hit subscribe. Send us your questions to f1explains@f1.com. And by the way, you don't just have to send us questions to that address. Let us know what you thought of the show. Let us obviously know what you want us to talk about. Any guests you particularly enjoyed having on. Anyone you'd like to hear us get on. We like to shine a light on people who you don't necessarily see all over the place in F1. So anyone you think that you would like us to speak to, drop us a message, f1explains@f1.com. I promise you, producer Chris and producer Jamie read every single email and pass them on to me and Katie. We really love reading them. So if you get in touch with us, we will read it. You can follow us, leave us a review, subscribe, like, it all helps. And of course, listen to F1's other podcasts. There's F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Nation. Now, obviously, I'm sat here in the joys of the Formula One paddock with planes flying over me. If you want to come to an F1 race too, I've actually got a little bit of ticket news for you. If you're thinking of going to the Las Vegas Grand Prix in November in particular, maybe you're going to come in via plane. That's fast. I don't know what planes they are. I need to find a plane geek to describe them to me. There are new ticket options for this year at Vegas. Stop interrupting me, planes. I'm trying to plug the Vegas Grand Prix. There are also new lower prices for the Las Vegas Grand Prix too. And you can get day tickets from just $50. Head to f1lasvegasgp.com. to find out more. Right, I'd better go. I hope you enjoy the Chinese Grand Prix this weekend. From wherever you're listening around the world, thank you so much for joining us. We're back next week. But for me, Christian Hugill, bye for now.